The United States of America doesn't stand with murderous dictatorships. We stand up to murderous dictatorships.
Vice President Mike Pence talks tough on North Korea at a conservative convention. It's Friday, February 23rd, and this is VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Remember, you're a part of our program. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, Amnesty International issues its report on 2017 with Myanmar and the U.S. coming under fire. A plan to save one of Australia's key water sources is on the verge of failure. And K-pop stars tune up for the Olympic closing ceremonies on today's VOA Asia. North Korea has announced it will send General Kim Jong-chul to Sunday's closing ceremony of the Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, South Korea. General Kim was North Korea's intelligence chief and is vice president of the Central Committee of the Workers' Party. He is also believed to have been behind several attacks on South Korea, including the sinking of the Cheonan Navy ship in which 46 South Korean sailors died. The North Korean delegation is scheduled to meet with South Korean President Moon Jae-in. Go Myung-hyun is a research fellow at the Asan Institute for Policy Studies in Seoul. He told VOA's Victor Beatty he was surprised by the announcement and the pending meeting with Mr. Moon.
North Korea has been doing quite a good job of spreading a positive image of the country and the regime using the Olympics. And for instance, sending Kim Jong-un's photogenic sister, Kim Yo-jong, to the opening ceremonies for the Olympics was a very good move on the part of North Korea. But I believe by sending Kim Jong-chul, who's being accused of being the mastermind behind the sinking of the Cheonan corvette, which killed dozens of South Korean sailors back in 2010, I think it's going to negate much of the gain that North Korea made in this Olympics.
Kim and his delegation will meet South Korean President Moon Jae-in. What might they discuss?
This is a very disappointing move on the part of the South Korean government, too. We know that the Kim Jong-chul has been sanctioned by the South Korean government back in 2010 for being the mastermind again against the aggression against the South Korean military. The fact of the matter is this current Moon Jae-in government is denying the findings by his predecessor, Park Geun-hye government, and also that, like other presidents before that. So in that sense, I think President Moon receiving Kim Jong-chul at the Olympics is going to send the wrong message to the domestic Korean audience, as well as the wrong message to Washington.
President Trump's daughter Ivanka will head the U.S. delegation to the closing ceremonies. While Ms. Trump also plans to meet with South Korea's president, there are no plans for the U.S. delegation to meet with the North Koreans. Meanwhile, at a conservative political gathering outside Washington Thursday, Vice President Mike Pence, who attended the opening ceremonies earlier this month, said that contrary to media reports, he did not plan to meet with Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, on the sidelines of the opening ceremonies.
The sister of Kim Jong-un is a central pillar of the most tyrannical and oppressive regime on the planet. An evil family clique that brutalizes, subjugates, starves, and imprisons its 25 million people. Even the United Nations reported that, in their words, the gravity, scale, and nature of these violations reveal a state that does not have a parallel in the contemporary world.
The vice president criticized media reports that suggested he would meet with Kim Yo-jong, saying the U.S. policy continues to be to apply maximum pressure to the Pyongyang government.
So for all those in the media who think I should have stood and cheered with the North Koreans, I say, the United States of America doesn't stand with murderous dictatorships. We stand up to murderous dictatorships.
South Korea's unification ministry spokesman, Baek Tae-hyun, said Thursday the South believes North Korea sending a delegation is helpful for improving relations and advancing the establishment of peace on the Korean Peninsula, including denuclearization. We invite you to read more about our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. These are among the top stories trending on voanews.com. U.S.-South Korea military exercises could end outreach to nuclear North. China denies contacts with separatist militants in Pakistan. A media monitor says there's no press freedom left in Cambodia. 5 dead in an Indonesia landslide. And Philippine rebels, we're not terrorists, we remain open to talks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and on the voanews.com website. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. I'm David Byrd in Washington. The human rights group Amnesty International has released its annual report for 2017-2018, with the Rohingya crisis in Myanmar and the Trump administration's policies coming under criticism for what Amnesty called peddling hatred. On Asia, the report cited the ethnic cleansing of Rohingya in Myanmar as a major human rights crisis. It said the Myanmar military's actions amounted to an apartheid which severely restricted virtually every aspect of their lives and segregated them from the rest of society. Salil Shetty is the Amnesty International Secretary General.
In 2017, we saw no clearer example than the Myanmar military's campaign of ethnic cleansing against the Rohingya population, led by General Min Aung Hlaing, which drove more than 600,000 women, men and children to flee in terror. It was arguably the biggest human rights story of 2017, but a story with its roots in years of hatred and systematic discrimination against the Rohingya.
Trina Hassan is Amnesty International's Crisis Response Director. She said Thursday that the blame for the Rohingya crisis does not fall solely on Myanmar's military.
I think that in terms of accountability for the burning, for the killings, for the mass atrocities that Amnesty International has documented, we really do need to be focusing on the commanders, commanding those units who are on the ground, who are giving those orders, and of course, the commander-in-chief himself. In terms of Aung San Suu Kyi, she has a role to play. This did not come out of nowhere. Prejudice against the Rohingya, the institutionalized discrimination against the Rohingya, these are issues that should have been dealt with by the civilian government.
On China, Amnesty said the consecration of Chinese President Xi Jinping as that country's most powerful leader in decades came against the backdrop of a stifling of freedom of expression and information. It also said that Beijing continued repression of religious minorities, particularly in the Xinjiang Uyghur Autonomous Region and in Tibet. Amnesty cited North Korea as continuing what it called a series of grave human rights violations, which amounted to crimes against humanity. Amnesty called the Philippine government's crackdown on alleged drug dealers a systematic, planned, organized, and encouraged by the authorities, and may have constituted crimes against humanity. The United States also came under fire for the Trump administration's restrictions on travel from several Muslim-majority countries, laws passed to restrict the freedom of speech, and xenophobic rhetoric. Margaret Huang is the executive director of Amnesty International United States.
As soon as he took office, he issued an executive order banning immigrants from Muslim countries around the world. And he has demonized the Muslim population in this country, frequently calling out when there is a Muslim American or a Muslim immigrant who might have done something wrong, but not having the same kind of harsh responses when a non-Muslim does the exact same thing.
Amnesty's Secretary General Salil Shetty said the past year also showed that public protests, including the Me Too movement and the women's protests here in the United States, are indispensable to maintaining human rights.
We have to remember that, in many countries, politicians have started pandering to fringe elements who are pushing for human values to be forgotten. And public protest is central to pushing back and protecting human rights.
To read the entire report, log on to Amnesty's website, amnesty.org. Happening now in Asia, a woman charged with killing North Korean leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother says she was paid to take part in several pranks before his death. Siti Aisha and a co-defendant have pleaded not guilty to murdering Kim Jong-nam in Kuala Lumpur Airport. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. I'm David Byrd in Washington. A plan to save one of Australia's most critical river systems is on the verge of collapse after disagreement about how to manage scarce water resources. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports the dispute centers on how to protect the environment while still supplying key agricultural needs.
The Murray-Darling Basin produces 40% of Australia's food, and for the past 5 years, a specially appointed authority has been trying to balance the system's environmental needs with the economic demands of farmers. A critical water-sharing agreement is in jeopardy following disputes between Australian states about how much water is allocated to agriculture and environmental needs. Victoria and New South Wales insist the plan is now untenable after the Australian Federal Parliament blocked changes to water allocations that would have given farmers 70 gigalitres of water, which had previously been earmarked for environmental use. Senators were worried by allegations that the system is riddled with corruption and by unscrupulous farmers stealing water from the river system. Federal Greens Party spokesperson Senator Sarah Hanson-Young.
Amongst this cesspool of water theft, corruption, mismanagement, why on earth would this parliament sign off on giving more water to the people who have behaved badly?
The Murray-Darling Basin is Australia's largest and most famous river system. It covers more than 1 million square kilometres in the country's southeast, an area bigger than France and Germany put together. Scientists have argued there's been no overall improvement in the health of the river system since a rescue plan was introduced more than 5 years ago. The recovery plan had set out to strike a balance to protect the environment and the interests of the agricultural industry, but both sides believe they're being shortchanged. There's also heated division between Australian states. Australia is the world's driest inhabited continent and is frequently subjected to severe drought. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, K-pop at the closing ceremonies. You're listening to VOA Asia.
Hi there, this is Larry London, the host of Border Crossings. Nice to meet you. I would love for you to join us each and every day, Monday through Friday, on Border Crossings for requests, dedications, giveaways, and surprise guests. We've got some of today's biggest hitmakers coming into the studio to talk about their music. And all we're missing is you. So join us Monday to Friday, right here on Border Crossings. This is the Voice of America.
This news from VOA Asia. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau told Indian business leaders Thursday his country is an ideal investment destination and announced that tech companies had committed more than $1 billion worth of investment already. Trudeau meets with his Indian counterpart Narendra Modi in New Delhi later today. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. Earlier this month, SpaceX launched the Falcon Heavy rocket from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The huge rocket is the latest in billionaire Elon Musk's plan to help put humans on Mars in the near future. But how will the astronauts live once they get there? As writer Faiza El-Masri and Faith Lapidus tell us, some scientists are working in the Omani Desert to answer that question.
This could be the planet Mars, but it's not. It's the Dhofar Desert in Oman. Known for its harsh conditions, it's one of the best places on Earth for 200 scientists from 25 nations to field test technology for a manned mission to the Red Planet. One of the tests will determine whether this 2.5-ton inflatable habitat can survive the desert's harsh weather conditions and protect its inhabitants.
Elon Musk and his team just proved that the Falcon Heavy works, which puts us now in a completely different realm, what we can put into deep space, what we can send to Mars. So access to space is one of the key elements, which to some extent has now been proven.
The majority of the science now being conducted to prepare for interplanetary expeditions is being done here on Earth. Harsh environments from Arizona to Siberia have been used to simulate extraterrestrial dangers as scientists fine-tune capsules, landers, rovers, and spacesuits. Space agencies call them analogs because they resemble the planetary extremes astronauts might encounter.
If you look in the landscape, in all those hills, this magnificent desolation of the far desert, there are places which have twins on Mars, areas that are also strikingly similar, not only from how they look, but also in terms of the mineralogy, the sand grain size distribution, many other aspects as well. And combined with this immense hospitality of the Omani people, we feel we are at the right place.
Scientists from around the world suggested experiments for the month-long mission named Amadi 18. They include a new spacesuit called Aouda. Once they work their way into the 50-kilogram suit, astronauts connect it to scientific instruments via USB. The visor displays maps, communications, and sensor data. The cutting-edge suit is called a personal spaceship because astronauts are able to breathe, eat, and conduct various experiments while wearing it. What they learn here could ultimately lead to humans walking on Mars within just a few decades. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
And to see video of this story, including that new spacesuit, visit our website, voanews.com. This news from VOA Asia, China has the world's largest and farthest-ranging fishing operation, outstripping the next 10 combined. Global Fishing Watch said after analyzing 5 years' worth of data, Chinese vessels amassed approximately 17 million hours of fishing in 2016. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. A group of scientists aboard a research vessel at the bottom of the world is examining the effects of climate change in Antarctica. The nonprofit environmental watchdog group Greenpeace sent the team to gather data to help build international support for declaring a part of the continent a sanctuary from industrial fishing. VOA's Arash Arabasadi reports.
At the bottom of the world lies Antarctica, a frozen continent with crumbling glaciers that nearly all of the world's scientists say is evidence of climate change. The Antarctic Peninsula is also home to animals increasingly threatened by overfishing.
Throughout history, we've seen that whenever new places open up to humans, we go in and we've exploited them. And we've seen that time and time again with the fishing industry. And the Antarctic is no different.
Greenpeace, the nonprofit environmental watchdog group, deployed a team of scientists aboard a research vessel to Antarctica. The Arctic Sunrise is on a three-month mission to document threats to the ecosystem of the Southern Ocean.
At the moment, we're seeing fishing companies wanting to expand what they're doing, and they're fishing for this tiny shrimp-like crustacean called krill. And krill basically underpins the entire food web in this area. Every single animal, one way or another, in the Antarctic depends on these tiny little creatures.
Through its Antarctic mission, Greenpeace looks to drum up international support protecting large areas of the South Pole. The group says that industrial fishing of krill threatens everything that lives there.
Antarctic Ocean Sanctuary would put huge areas of this amazing ocean off limits to human activity. So it would basically be a way of stopping the krill fishing industry expanding and pushing out its operations into these near pristine waters, into the foraging grounds of penguins and whales, and it would be preserving this amazing area for generations to come.
At a whopping 1.8 million square kilometers, the proposed sanctuary would be the largest protected area in the world. Greenpeace says it submitted the Antarctic Ocean Sanctuary to the European Union for consideration at a marine life convention in Australia this October. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
And if you've noticed, my voice might be a little bit hoarse today. That's because I stayed up real late here in the United States to watch the USA women's ice hockey team take on their arch rivals from Canada and beat the Canadian ladies in a shootout. It was way early in the morning here before that game was over. Congratulations to Team USA. And after 16 days of pageantry, politics, and athletic competition, the Winter Olympics will close Sunday in Pyeongchang, South Korea. Organizers have asked K-pop stars CL and EXO to help celebrate the end of the Games. CL, or Lee Chae-rin, released her debut English-language single Lifted last year. The 26-year-old singer and rapper recently released a Korean-language ballad, I'll Be There, an acoustic paean to her fans, which expresses a sense of dreariness and a state of stagnation. It is the first solo song following her attempts to break into the U.S. market. The Korean singer says that she is honored to be performing in front of home fans at the Olympics.
Every stage I prepare and I put all my best into it, so it's no different. But it's just more exciting and extra special for me because it's, you know, maybe not but once in a lifetime thing for me.
CL says that she is preparing a great show and is excited to be on stage with the whole world watching.
I'm very honored and glad to be invited to close and be on the show and perform in Korea and for the Olympics. You know, it's a festival, it's a celebration, and I love how passionate everyone is about this, and, you know, I'm ready to enjoy it and enjoy it together. I hope you guys have fun too. It don't sound down, baby. Rhythm and on your mind. It don't sound down, baby.
바뀌는 소리쳐. The Korean boy band EXO, which released its fourth album, The War, last summer, will also perform on Sunday. The album entered the Billboard 200, but topped out at number 87 in August. EXO ended last year as the most popular celebrities to join Twitter. Their song, Coco Bop, had the most mentions on that social media platform. Singer Bae Kyun says that the band feels the pressure of performing in front of a South Korean and a worldwide audience. He says, I felt very honored that we can perform. At the same time, there was a lot of pressure, so we have prepared a lot. Now I cannot wait to show our great performance this Sunday. Olympic organizers are hoping for a better audience response than the last Winter Games. 4 years ago, the Sochi closing ceremonies broadcast received an 8.7 and 13 household rating with just 15.1 million U.S. viewers. That was the lowest household rating for a Winter Olympic Games closing ceremony ever, dipping just below the previous record holder of Turin in 2006. The lowest-rated closing ceremony's viewership was Innsbruck in 1976 with 12.9 million U.S. viewers. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Now, you can get our program on iTunes and on SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com. Click on the red Listen tab and look under Our Broadcast Programs, and you'll find VOA Asia on that next page. Be sure to let us hear from you. You can post your comments or ask questions on our VOA Asia Facebook page. You can also email us. Our address is voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us on this Friday, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aiden Okut. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy the rest of your day.